I know we all want the robocalls to stop, but it's complicated. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. Uh-oh, you guys, I think I'm in trouble. Check out this voicemail I got last week.
You will be taken under custody by the local cops, as there are 4 serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment.
Oh, no. And this is why I never answer my phone anymore. And I'm not alone. When the Nobel Prizes for Economics were handed out back in early October, Dr. Paul Romer almost didn't find out that he had won. Here he is talking to the prize committee afterwards.
I got 2 phone calls this morning, and I didn't answer either one because I thought it was some spam call. So I wasn't expecting the prize.
The Federal Communications Commission estimates that Americans get 4 billion unwanted automated calls every month. And those calls are working. We get scammed out of $9.5 billion every year. But if we can filter out most of the spam in our email, why haven't we solved robocalling? First, some good news. We do have the technology to figure out if a call is spam. Jonathan Sassy is a marketing executive at First Orion. They make software that phone carriers can use to warn consumers if an incoming call is likely to be spam.
As we analyze all the phone calls coming through, it becomes pretty clear to us at a very high degree of certainty that a particular call would be a scammer at that moment.
The company's system can tell if a scammer is spoofing a real phone number, making it look like a legit local call.
So, for example, you probably don't make 10 or 20 or 50,000 phone calls a day. But if all of a sudden your phone number started to do that, our system would identify that as being pretty suspicious.
Sounds great. So just give that tech to the cell phone carriers and they'll totally fix it, right? No.
Carriers face a lot of liability if they block calls that they're not supposed to block.
This is Tejas Narachania, an assistant professor of law at the University of California at Berkeley. He was a special counsel at the FCC from 2012 to 2013. He said when carriers block phone calls, they get sued.
Verizon, I think, settled one case for about $5 million. T-Mobile settled one case about blocking calls for $40 million. Now, these come up in slightly different contexts, but at bottom, they're about, did these companies block calls that they weren't supposed to block?
And he said, to be honest, you don't want your carriers deciding what calls go through.
So AT&T, for example, might block calls coming from Verizon, or T-Mobile might block calls coming from AT&T. That would create a more fragmented network. It would break down the utility of our telephone network. And it would give those companies that have the highest number of subscribers a serious competitive advantage.
All right, but what about the spoofing technology? Surely we can stop that, right? Still no. Jonathan Sassy says there's a real-world example where scammers took over the phone number of a children's hospital and called people in that area to trick them into thinking they owed hospital bills that they really didn't. But the actual hospital was still using that number, too.
Unfortunately, it's not as simple as just say, we're going to stop spoofing or we're going to stop these kinds of software from being used because of the fact that they're taking advantage of very legitimate uses of these kinds of things and just abusing them to the point where they're stealing money from people.
So short answer is no easy answer. There are apps you can download that will warn you that a call might be spam. But look, as long as the spammers are still making $9.5 billion a year, the calls are going to keep coming. And now for some related links. First, a correction. Kara Schoonmaker wrote to us about our show on San Francisco's proposed business tax. I referenced a tax in Seattle that would have made businesses pay per employee to raise money for affordable housing. And I said that voters had overturned the tax, which is not correct. The city council imposed the tax, and then, after a concerted campaign against it from Amazon and other local businesses, voters and citizens began to oppose the tax, and the city council overturned it. But there wasn't any voting at all. So thank you for the note, Kara, and the careful listen. Here's what's happening this week that could make some tech news in San Francisco, the AfroTech Conference for, as the website says, Black techies, startups, and entrepreneurs. Side note, when I went to the AfroTech website to find dates for the conference, because I am doing my darndest to go to it, I found a story about how Snapchat's PR firm was suing an influencer for not following through on a contract to promote Snap's spectacles. And what I found amazing is that the contract was signed in September, which means Snap still thinks that spectacles are a thing. I also learned that Snap launched Spectacles 2, which is what Lucas Sabat, who's also on the show Grownish, was supposed to be promoting. Huh. All right, also this week, Techonomy, the Bay Area conference where luminaries gather to talk about tech and business and the economy, and which takes place every year at the Ritz-Carlton in Half Moon Bay, which is a, let's say, wealthy enclave of the San Francisco Bay Area. On the plus side, the theme this year is harnessing tech for responsible growth. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. You trust Marketplace to cover more than business news. You rely on us to connect the dots between complex economic issues and why they matter to you. To keep public service journalism going strong, please go to marketplace.org today and become a Marketplace investor with a donation in any amount. We appreciate your support.